from the mountainous ancient kingdom of Wallachia, in what is now modern Romania, a man emerged who would excel himself in devising innovative methods of torture and mass murder. In a bloody 6-year reign, the ruler of this kingdom brought terror to citizens and foreigners alike. Prince Vlad Dracula was more than just the inspiration for the bloodthirsty vampire of legend. To this day, he's still referred to as Vlad Tepes, Vlad the Impaler, in memory of his favorite method of killing.
There's no time.
O'clock.
Hey, you guys, look, you can see our faces again.
Yeah. Now, if you heard before, I announced that we were going to start doing the news in video. We're not quite ready. This isn't how it's going to look. We're going to get green screen, and we're going to get new cameras and new mics, and there's going to be new lighting.
Yeah, we're going to get all fancy.
So it's going to look a lot better. This is just kind of a, we're just going to start making the change now to do the news face-to-face.
Yeah, we definitely wanted to do, like, doing the whole thing in video was too labor-intensive, so we decided to, because our
very data-heavy, too.
Yeah, because our 100th episode was so popular and people were like, oh, we can see you, that's so cool and everything. Right. So we thought a good compromise would be to do just the opening segment, like the shout outs.
Yeah,
and
to kind of
story.
Establish it, you know.
Yeah, and then do that in video. And then, you know, when we get onto the main topic, we'll just go back to the
slideshow
format
and video,
like we did before.
Right.
So yeah, from now on, the regular shows are going to be like that. We'll see, but we might do the movie reviews like that too eventually, but we'll see how that's going to go.
You know, it's not going to look like this. The video and the audio is going to be a lot better.
Yeah, this is just our first kind of experiment with
kind of get used to, to get used to it.
Yeah. But yeah, like I said, we're gonna get better camera, better mic, better little chroma.
Probably a couple
background.
Weeks. Might be a couple shows like this. We'll just see how it goes.
Yeah. So first let's do our shout outs. If you didn't see our last movie review, it was the Arnold Schwarzenegger movie, The Running Man.
Yeah.
Based on the Stephen
that's
King
good
novel.
Yeah. That's good
yeah. That was a really fun movie with all the wrestlers and stuff in it. But yeah, so go watch that if you haven't seen it already. Also check out our Zazzle store at zazzle.com/13o'clock. We have all those cool t-shirts and also a tote bag, so go check that out. Also, if you'd like to financially support the show, you can go to our Patreon page, which is patreon.com/13o'clockpodcast, or you can go to our blog, which is 13o'clockpodcast.wordpress.com, and there's a link in the sidebar to a PayPal account if you would like to give a one-time donation. I would also like to give a shout-out to our latest patron, whose name is Mary Ellen. Hi.
Hey, yeah, that's right, yeah.
So, yeah, let's see.
Thank you very much for supporting the show.
Yes, as always, thank you to everyone that supports the show. Here's something that I kind of wanted to mention. Now, if you guys remember, if you listen to the Suspiria movie review that I did by myself, that's probably going back to, like, January. And I think I mentioned on there that I was working on, like, a card game that was sort of based on Giallo, like a Giallo movie. That game is actually done, as well as an expansion pack. Now, it's on GameCrafter. I'm not real sure. I might have to order a copy first, like before I can officially put it on sale. It does say that you can sell it without doing that, so we'll see how it goes. But I'll put a link in the sidebar if you want to go check it out. You know, I started a thing over there called Giallo Games, and I kind of want to, you know, over when I have time, I kind of want to do more little games like that. This one is kind of like, it's called A Crimson Drop on a Crystal Palette, and it's based on all the Giallo movie tropes, and it kind of looks like a Giallo movie. And it's sort of like Clue, but a lot more complicated. It's kind of a murder mystery type of game. And I also have another game that's going to be called Our Lady of Sorrows, which is sort of based on the Suspiria mythology. More accurately, it's based on the Our Ladies of Sorrow, the Thomas de Quincey mythology that Dario Argento used for Suspiria. So I went back to that. That one's going to be more like, sort of like a board game, but it's going to have a board that you build as you go, kind of like Mystery Mansion, if you remember that. So, you know, that'll probably be out too at some point, but I'm still working on those because they're fun, but I just do them a little bit at a time. So, you know, go check them out if you're into games. Now, I only have one news story today.
This is the news.
Thank you.
Tom and Jenny on Africa. No, how was I supposed to sing that shit?
You're supposed to sing it like Sweet Caroline.
This is the news.
There you go. That's it. Yeah. Okay. So there's only one news story today, but it's a fucking weird one, right? It's like this. I had to do this. This is from Florida. So it's a Florida man story.
Oh, shit. Here we go.
Yeah. I know, right? Every time you say Florida. Oh, here we go. Now, this actually happened in Palm Beach Gardens, which is a really upper middle class, upper class kind of enclave down by West Palm Beach, which is down by Miami, about 170 miles from here, from our house anyway. The man at the center of this story was 71 years old, and his name is Alan Abrahamson. And he lived in this really fancy, like, gated community. He had, like, a $1 million house, you know, beautiful wife and children and all this other kind of stuff.
Is this one you were telling about the other day?
Yes, I told you about it. This is, like, the weirdest shit ever. This is so weird. Like, yeah. I can't figure out why this happened. I don't understand. Yeah. This is going back to January. So evidently, this guy, acting totally normal, then one day he's like, okay, well, I'm going to go on my morning walk. Like, he would take a walk across the golf course and he would go to Starbucks and do whatever. And so he's doing that this one particular morning in January. The security cameras saw him like going past a particular, now 37 minutes after he was last seen on the security camera, there was a gunshot. You can hear it on the camera footage. Now, someone else that was out walking their dog or something finds his body. He's just laying there on the golf course with one bullet hole in his chest, right?
Yeah.
Now, he had his wallet with him still, but his wife said, well, he usually had like a money clip with a bunch of cash in it, and that was gone. And she also said that a watch he always wore was gone. So everyone's thinking, oh, well, someone robbed him and shot him and just left him there.
Yeah.
So since January, this has been being investigated as a murder, and pretty much the only one that's happened in Palm Beach Gardens, because only like 50,000 people live there, and it's all like rich people, and apparently they don't shoot each other. They do other kinds of crimes, like white collar crimes. Right. So they don't murder each other, but
shooting people's for poor people,
I guess.
Unless this guy's fighting, they were going to shoot each other anyway, no matter what their income was.
That's true.
One of us has got to go, or both of us have got to go. Remember, that was basically Romeo and Juliet. Remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So, like I said, since January, they've been investing this in a homicide investigation. Now, they have had no leads, no suspects. They couldn't find the murder weapon or anything. And then they notice, they're like watching the footage and stuff, and they're like, well, he looks like he's carrying something. That seems to be a little weird. So after a while, the cops are like, they have no idea. They have no leads. And so finally, his wife is like, well, I'll unlock his phone and I'll go through all his stuff and maybe we'll find some kind of hint as to like who wanted to kill him and stuff like that. Okay, well, when they unlock his phone, they discover in there that he has made a purchase on Christmas Day of 2017 that was a $55 weather balloon.
Here it comes.
Yeah. Now, they also discover by looking through all his Google searches, and this is why you should always clear your cache, motherfuckers, you know what I mean? Because they can find out anything. Yeah. Even like voice searches, they can find that shit out.
Yeah, and they're always listening all the time. NSA, gotcha.
So evidently, he goes to, like, 2 days before he died, they also discover that he went to an industrial supply store in West Palm Beach. So they go there and they pull the receipt and they found that he bought a 40 cubic foot helium tank. So he has bought a weather balloon and a helium tank. Yeah. That seems a little strange.
And they can't find it.
I wonder why he bought those things.
They can't find the balloon.
So his family's basically like, I don't know. Then they wonder, they're like, okay, well, the guy, he went out of the range of the security camera and then it took 37 minutes before the gunshot. So they had a guy, like one of the cops said, well, I'm going to retrace that route and see how long it actually takes to get to the spot where he found the body. And it took like 3 or 4 minutes. He's like, so what was that guy doing? He was just like standing there, like dicking around, like all this for like half an hour. What the fuck? And then they find out that they start looking into more of his Google searches. Here's a Google search from July 7th, 2019. How to commit suicide. April 10th, 2012. Life insurance suicide. March 17th, 2016. Undetectable suicide methods. February 21st, 2017, Gizmodo explains what happens when you get shot in the head. If shot in the heart, do you die instantly? Can you have a gunshot suicide with no weapon present? Ah,
yeah.
There's the rub. Now, also February 23rd, 2017, he searched for YouTube SEG suppressors, Jefferson Silencer and Walther PPK suppressed 380. Voice search, how many cubic feet of helium do you need to raise 1 pound?
Yeah.
This is what the dude did. He had a weather balloon. He filled it up with the helium. He tied the gun to the weather balloon, shot himself in the chest, and then the weather balloon carried the gun away, presumably into the Atlantic Ocean.
Yep.
So he has been wanting to, apparently he's been wanting to commit suicide since 2009, because that's when he first started Googling that shit. So this is something that's been on his mind for a very long time, and his family didn't even know. But here's the thing. If he wanted to commit suicide, why not just do that? Why make it look like a murder?
It's probably just, has something to do with the insurance policy.
That's what I was wondering.
He wasn't covered for suicide.
That's kind of what I was thinking.
So he wanted to make sure his wife was taken care of.
That's kind of what I was thinking. That like it had to be something like that, because otherwise, why would you go to all that trouble to make it look like... Here's another
thing,
too.
Makes you wonder, why don't you just wreck your car?
Yeah, that seems like it would be a lot less...
Maybe he wasn't covered for accidents like that. Hmm. I don't know.
Yeah, it's like, I would have to look at his insurance policy, because I'm really mystified as to why you would have such a convoluted... Now, they think that he might have got this idea from CSI Las Vegas, because apparently somebody on that show... I haven't seen it. I just saw it in the news article. But apparently someone on that show tried to pull the same stunt, where they're like, well, I want to commit suicide, but I want it to look like a murder.
Yeah.
So I'm going to tie a gun to a fucking balloon. That's so weird, man.
That's a good way to do it.
You think?
Oh, yeah, because you pull the trigger, you drop the gun, and it takes off.
It was just funny because they said when they found his body, they're like, well, the only thing, they just like one little bullet hole in his chest, right? Yeah. And then there was a trickle of blood like over his shoulder. They said, we noticed that his index finger was sticking out, but we didn't really think much of it at the time. They were just investigating it like a murder. But in some ways...
But he may have had it around backwards with his thumb inside there.
What happened to the helium tank, though?
I don't know. They didn't find the tank?
No. Where the fuck did it go? Did he?
He threw it away somewhere.
He must have thrown it. Well, how big is this helium tank?
Oh, you would think a helium tank would probably be the size of a propane tank.
That's
what
I mean. I was thinking it was like a propane tank or like an oxygen tank. Like, you know what I mean?
He hid it, maybe?
Maybe he put it in the, because like, it was on a golf course, so maybe he put it in like the water trap or something.
Something like that. He got rid of it.
They need to like dredge that shit. I'm surprised.
Maybe he filled that up and put that onto a balloon, too, and it carried the helium tank away. So he filled up two balloons.
I don't think he had that much helium.
Maybe he filled up two balloons.
He only bought one, though.
He only bought one?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't think he had enough helium. How much helium does it take to lift up another helium tank?
Well, the helium tank, when it's empty, may not weigh that much.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know. I just thought this was really fucking weird. So I'm like, that's like the most Florida story ever.
Yeah.
And this is like an old guy. I don't know. He's the old guy. He was 71 years old. Yeah. And he's like, I'm just going to do... The only thing that bothers me, it's like, I can see why maybe he wanted to make it look like a murder so that his, wife would get the insurance money or whatever, because maybe that's how that shit works. But also, you're kind of being a dick because you're, like, wasting a bunch of police resources and tax dollars investigating a murder that's not a murder.
So he must have shot himself with a .380.
He did, yeah.
Boy, that's not a surefire way to go. That's not a powerful caliber.
Yeah.
You'd have to have really good shot placement.
He shot himself right in the heart.
Right in the heart, so he knew where to hold it. You know, of course, he planned the whole thing out. So
yeah, like I said, he looked like he'd been planning it for, like, 9 years.
You had to hold it around there and pow, get a perfect shot.
In fact,
I wouldn't trust my life nor my death to 380. 380 is kind of iffy. Kind of, maybe that might be effective. It's the minimum effective caliber. 32 and 25.
I don't know,
well,
32
is not that different, actually, but 25 and 22 out of a little pistol. Not in a barrel there.
Like
380
you said,
can kind of do it, but...
It's just... God, it seems so convoluted.
Surefire way, a 12-gauge shotgun to the face or to the head. A friend of mine killed himself when he was a little kid. Oh, not really a little kid. I guess he was about 17 with a .410 shotgun.
Yikes.
Yeah, right to the chest. Got drunk and did it.
See, I would not like to leave that kind of a mess for people to clean up or for your loved ones to find. Because I had a friend in high school who later, like a year or two later, he killed himself and he wrapped himself up in a blanket, like on his bed, and then shot himself in the head, and his dad found him.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I've heard of some weird ways to go. People throwing gasoline on themselves while they're in the bed and setting themselves on fire.
Fuck, why?
I don't know.
Sleeping pills are so easily available.
I think it's an anger thing. An anger thing. Some people just
do. And you don't know what hit you.
Some people, they go in a certain way. They want to suffer.
I guess.
Yeah.
Weird. I don't know. But yeah, I thought this was a really weird story. So that was the only news story. Because I'm like, I think that was weird enough to cover the whole thing. But anyway, okay, so after that news story, we're going to go back to our regular format, and we're going to go on to our main topic, which today is Vlad the Impaler.
Yep, Dracula, the original Dracula.
Yeah, the OG Dracula. So enjoy. Okay, so we're going to get to our main topic now. But before we do that, when we recorded the opening segment and the news and everything, I forgot like one particular shout out that I was supposed to get to. So I'm just going to mention it real quick before we get into talking about Vlad the Impaler. Now, the Saturday after this episode goes up, which will be Saturday, July 28th, 2018, if you are in the Central Florida area, you need to come down to Will's Pub because our friends, the post-punk slash gothic band A Starry Night from Miami, will be playing there this Saturday night in celebration of their new album coming out, which is called Midnight Conversations. It's very good. I've actually heard some songs off of it. And I also designed the cover. I didn't do the artwork, but I, you know, laid it out and everything and laid out the booklet.
Yeah. It's a good band. If you like The Cure, Sisters of Mercy,
Joy Division,
and Interpol. It's kind of like that, all twisted into one band. It was my favorite band from Florida.
Yeah.
And I helped get them signed through a friend of ours.
And they're doing
really well. They won a bunch of awards in Germany. They've been touring, doing an entire global tour. And, you know, they've gotten new videos out. We'll probably on the show right now, Jenny's probably grafting in photographs of the band. Maybe we'll put a little bit of a video or something in maybe towards the end. We'll see. It's a good band, though. If you like that kind of music, then you'd like this. And, of course, Shauna's going to be there. I'll be there up at the bar. Jenny's going to have a table set up. She'll probably sell a few books there. You are bringing books, right?
Just a couple.
Yeah.
I'm bringing a couple of my true crime ones, a couple of my short story compilations.
They gave us a free offer to sell some books there. But, you know, I was like, Jenny, you sure you want to sell books at the bar? I mean, we need to be up at the bar drinking to sell them books.
So, yeah, I'm bringing a couple. So if you want to come down, I can sign them for you and stuff like that. I'll have like some of my new true crime ones and a couple.
Yeah, but it's a good hangout. It's kind of like a British pub kind of environment with a stage and a place that they've constantly play shows. It's kind of like our version of CBGB's for Orlando.
Yeah, and it's been around a long time. Forever, yeah.
Right.
So yeah, I'll have a table there. Shauna will have a table there for her Battle Glitter, so she'll have some of her jackets and stuff. And also, our friend Becca will be there with her artwork, with various things of her artwork. So
there's going to be a bunch of cool people there. They always show up for these Astari shows. So if you guys want to come hang out, you can come hang out with us and take photos.
Yeah. So yeah, that'll be this Saturday, July 28th. In Orlando at Will's Pub, so check it out.
Yeah, don't run. If you run up on me, tell me. Oh, I'm a listener, okay? If you run up on me real quick, I might think you're trying to whip my ass. So, especially when I've had a few drinks on me. Just, give me...
Come get punched by Tom.
Yeah, no, just be easy. I got that PTSD, okay? Yeah. Come up on me slow.
That sounded really dirty. All right. So, speaking of coming up on someone slow, let's talk about Vlad the Impaler.
Yeah, oh, I like old Vlad. I like old Vlad.
Well, the thing about Vlad the Impaler, it's like he has such a reputation for cruelty and things like that, which, you know, a lot of that is earned.
Yeah, oh yeah.
It's not kind of the same, because I was thinking of him in the same vein as, you know, we did the show about Elizabeth Bathory.
No, very different.
Who's kind of like, I'm not real sure how much the legends about Elizabeth Bathory are exaggerated.
If they're true, she was a serial killer and a psychopath and a sexual sadist.
Right. Which, you know, and I'm not saying they're not true.
Not Vlad. Vlad was goal-directed violence.
Yeah.
He had a mission.
And I don't know, like, I'm sure some of his exploits are probably exaggerated, but probably not all that much. Because I think that, there were writings about him contemporary with him being alive or shortly after he died. And even though some of those things that were written and some of the legends about him were written by people who were hostile toward him or his enemies, he also had people write about him that were kind of on his side, and they said a similar thing. So I think most of the things about him are probably pretty historically accurate.
What you're dealing with is like basically a warlord. A warlord who's kind of constantly being let out of his cage to stop an enemy invasion. He was very good at using terror tactics. Did he enjoy it? He pretended to enjoy it, at least.
He probably did, I'm thinking.
Well, I would think that, you know, when you're dealing with a situation that he was in, having a fearsome and terrible reputation really helps you on defense.
Yeah, because he had a much smaller army than, you know, the people he was fighting against or trying to keep back. So
if you've got rumors out there that you're this bloodthirsty monster, that helps you defend your territory. But, you know, we'll get to that.
Terror tactics. You're willing to fear tactics and reputation and things like that.
You're trying to puff yourself up to be as fearsome as you can possibly be. That's what I see. I have a military background, and that's what I'm seeing.
And like I said, he was a man of his time.
Yeah.
Now, the fact that people commented on his tactics, even in the Middle Ages, kind of makes me think that people were just kind of like, ooh, dial it back, bro, just a little bit. But you know what I mean?
I don't think he could dial it back.
But I don't think, yeah. So, yeah. I mean, some of the stuff he did was fairly effective. Right. Some of it not so much, but...
Brutality and violence were very standard in his time. He had to go beyond that in order to compensate for his military weaknesses.
That's actually a good way of putting it, yeah.
Yeah, you had to go beyond that. You had to become
because you
this...
had to do something to stand out.
Right, because everybody else was doing bad shit.
Yeah.
You had to be even more. You had to be even worse. And really, really what it is, it's because he didn't have a powerful army. So you had to use terrain and terror tactics and reputation. That was your means to a good defense.
And I think now, I mean, we're still talking about him nowadays, obviously, so he must have made somewhat of an impression.
Yeah.
Now, I think that the thing about him that a lot of people, and I think this kind of came from the 70s with the publishing of that book, In Search of Dracula, where it kind of became common knowledge that Vlad the Impaler was the real person that the fictional character of Dracula was based on, which is sort of accurate as far as it goes. Bram Stoker did take the name Dracula from him, did use like little bits of his general history, his general outline.
Bram knew his name.
Yeah.
He knew a little bit about him. And he just used that in the Dracula character.
Yeah, I might get a little bit more into that in a little bit, but...
The Dracula was his nickname. Little Draco, Little Dragon.
Son of the Dragon,
Because his dad was Big Dragon, basically.
Yeah.
That was his... That's how you could translate his name. And that was... It wasn't really a name. It was more like a nickname.
It was a title.
It was a title that was given to his father by an association of knights that were warlords trying to defend Europe from basically all the Turkish invasions. It was a gang of knights. It was an order.
His dad was Vlad II. And Vlad II was, as you said, he was kind of incorporated into this Order of the Dragon, which was a set of Christian knights with, and their whole purpose was to fight back the Ottoman Turks and keep them from encroaching further into Europe.
And I guarantee you, they're calling themselves an Order of the Dragon. These guys were badasses. They had to have been. They were, you know, if you saw Fury Road, what you're doing is you're talking about like Immortan Joe and his gang. They were about like that, probably.
Yeah. So, you know, after Vlad II, the dad, was incorporated into this Order of the Dragon, he became known as Vlad Dracul, because Dracul means dragon. There's some dispute over whether it also means devil. In modern Romanian, I think it does. In old Romanian, I'm not sure.
It probably, they're talking about the dragon from Revelations.
Yeah, so it might be
from the Book of Revelations.
Term.
Although I'm not sure, they were probably Eastern Orthodox.
And
I don't think Eastern Orthodox had the Book of Revelations. But they might have been influenced by other Christian religions that equated the dragon with the devil.
Yeah, so I've seen both things, like, oh, it doesn't really mean that or whatever. But
Christian devils, that's what they're talking about.
I mean, but for sure it means dragon. So, so since his dad was Vlad Dracul, so he would be, in old Romanian, he would be Draculea, which would be son of the dragon. Yeah. And so that's what they would have called him. Although, as far as I know, like through my research, I don't think they referred to him as Dracula or Draculea at the time. I mean, once he kind of came into power, once he came into power, he was actually just known as Vlad Tepes, you know, which means the Impaler. So that's what he became known as.
Yeah, and there's never really a good agreement of how to pronounce that. Is it Tepes? Is it Sepes?
I've heard it pronounced like Tepes.
Sepes
is how
it doesn't matter. It's the same. It's the same guy.
Now they're not entirely sure where or when he was born. They think it was about 1431. You know, the whole association between Vlad and Dracula and Transylvania, he was probably born in Transylvania, although his dad actually owned some land in Transylvania, but the castle that is now known as Dracula's Castle, where all the tourists go and everything, and they have all the Halloween parties, which is Bran Castle, he never lived there. He never owned that. He might have visited it once or twice. They're not really sure, but that's not his. If you actually want to go to a castle in Romania that Vlad Dracula did live in over the years, you want to go to Poenari Castle or Poenari Citadel. That was actually where he lived, and I'll get into that a little bit later. They think he might have been born in a town called Turgovishta. The house that he was supposedly born in still stands, although it looks very different today. Apparently, I saw a documentary about Vlad the Impaler that tried to reconstruct what his castles looked like, what his houses looked like, you know, at the time that he was alive.
From an American point of view, it's amazing that that building, that that structure still exists, because nothing we know of in our world exists for long. Everything made in America pretty much is designed to crumble within 50 years. But to see that dwellings still existing from the 1400s.
And it's there. You can visit it. It's now known as the Vlad Tepes House. And it actually is, looks like it's two or three stories now, but the upper stories were added in the 17th century.
So it must be mud brick.
It looks like it, So they're like, they're not entirely sure that that's where he was born, but they said if that's where he was born, then it was only one story when he
and
was
it looks
born.
Brand
so
new.
It's very modest.
It looks nice. You could move into it right now. It's running, and it's in a nice town.
Yeah, they've actually like kept it up. And
yeah, it looks like a little medieval village.
Yeah.
And we got to kind of straighten this out. This is actually happening in what we would call the Renaissance.
Yeah.
But Eastern Europe was not really experiencing the Renaissance in the same way Western Europe was. Eastern Europe was still pretty much medieval. It had some Renaissance technology. The elites could read and write, of course. They had some good building technology. But socially, you're talking about Dark Ages, you know, they were...
Pretty much, yeah.
These were rough people.
So the reason they think that Vlad might have been born in Turgovishta was that at the time, this was like the seat of Wallachia, and that is where his father was the quote-unquote voivod, meaning the ruler or the king or the prince or whatever.
It's a cool to that title, voivod.
Well, there's a band called
There's
that,
a band called voivod.
Like an industrial band.
Yeah.
All right, so generally what happens, Vlad has an older brother named Mircea, and he has a younger brother named Radu, called Radu the Handsome, which I kind of love. So since his dad, Vlad II, was in this Order of the Dragon, and they were kind of tasked with keeping the Ottoman Turks out of Christian Europe because they were right on the border.
Yeah, and when you see the architecture of the time and a lot of the stuff that was happening in Wallachia, you can see that there's a big Turkish influence in everything. This is a border town. This is a border province.
Yeah, it's right on the border.
There's not a big difference between Turkey and Wallachia other than the religion, you know. And I would probably think that ethnically they were probably pretty much the same.
Oh, yeah. So basically what happens is in 1442, they think Vlad Tepes was about 13 years old at that point. His father got called to what was presumably a peace summit or, you know, some kind of meeting with the then Sultan, the Ottoman Sultan, who was Murad II. So Vlad II brings little Vlad and Radu to this meeting, except it was a trap.
Yeah.
The Sultan basically said, well, I'm going to keep your two kids. Like, he let the dad go, but he said, I'm going to keep your two kids in prison so you don't get any funny ideas.
Yeah, that was pretty standard standard behavior back then. You keep hostages, and that's how you keep your enemies under control, keep them from attacking you, and you can manipulate them that way.
Right, and that's what they did, and that was in 1442. Yeah. Now, the two kids, Vlad and Radu, were actually treated pretty well. They were educated in the sciences and philosophy and things. Some sources say they were also taught the art of war, swordsmanship, riding horses, things of that nature.
So what you're doing is you're trying to create the next generation of leaders, and you reinsert them into the enemy kingdom, so their allegiance is with you.
Right.
That's what they're doing right there.
And in Radu's case, the younger brother, I'm not sure how old he was, but he was younger than Vlad, and Vlad was about 13. So I'm thinking maybe he was, you know, 11, 12, 10, something. Now, on Radu, that worked.
Yeah.
Radu pretty much assimilated
into Turkish culture.
Into Turkish culture and went over to the Ottoman side.
The Turks probably had more to offer at this period of time.
It's possible that they did.
Than Western Europe could offer Wallachia. So strategically, it probably made more sense to be a part of the Turkish Empire. You know, in that place and time.
But yeah, so like I said, they were treated very well. And Radu was just kind of like, I mean, I saw a historian like on a documentary talking about how Radu, since he was the younger, he wasn't really interested in being a warlord. He just wanted to be a prince, you know. Yeah. He just kind of wanted all the princely stuff without having to, I don't want to go into battle or anything like that. So I think he kind of went more along that line. So he's like, all right, I'll just acquiesce and do what they want me to do. But Vlad was not having it.
No.
So he was actually imprisoned for quite a while. This was actually in what they call this Tokat Castle, which is in northern Turkey. It still stands, although it's pretty much a ruin. They're doing archaeological digs on it, and they actually think they've found the dungeon area where, you know, where Vlad and his brother were probably kept. But you can visit. Yeah. It's open to tourists and stuff.
Although whenever I hear about royals imprisoning each other, even in different civilizations, between different civilizations, I'm always very skeptical of that concept of being kept into a dungeon or a cell.
Yeah, see, I don't think
they actually did that.
I don't think so either.
I think they spent most of their time with the other royals running around up on the surface, basically kind of like a trustee. Thinking. The idea was just to keep an eye on them.
Right.
And keep them from getting money and forming armies. Typically, in a situation like that, you're basically kind of like dealing with very sophisticated gang warfare. It's not in... Now, a king or a royal or something like that, they were actually destined to rule by God, so there's this religious concept. Killing them outright and screwing them over could backfire on you. It was better to keep them as trustees and maybe one day use them in the future. That's probably what happened with Vlad.
That's what I was thinking.
Vlad was probably kept in a gilded cage.
Yeah.
And if you needed him, you could reactivate him, which they seem to have done that several times.
Right.
This idea that he was some kind of a hardened prisoner, hardened criminal in some, you know, dungeon down in the Bastille living in filth, probably not.
See, that's what I'm thinking too, because by all accounts, everything that I've read about his imprisonment by the Sultan was that he and his brother were treated quite well.
Yeah, that matches up with what's happened in other places and times in history.
Because like you said, they didn't. If they'd wanted to kill him, they would have just killed him. They didn't want to do it. They wanted them over on their side.
It was usually kind of like, usually royalty kind of had the modern equivalency of immunity, diplomatic immunity. It wasn't a good idea to kill him. Religion was involved.
Yeah.
That's why. And also, if you got captured, they would kill you.
Yeah.
Or so royals tended to cover each other in case you know, because you were always in danger of having some of your relatives captured. So if you were killing your captives, they would kill your relatives if they got captive. Usually it was kind of like mafia dons. They had to sit down to decide whether or not they should actually kill a king or not. And they probably had to have pretty heavy consensus that, we should kill it.
Kind
of like what they did to Elizabeth Bathory.
Right.
They had to sit down. They really couldn't even say, we shouldn't kill her. Let's not set that precedent. Let's just imprison her for real in this room. We'll just kind of wall her up and take care of her.
Yeah, because then it was just kind of like, she'll stay at everyone's
hair. And she's punished.
But
and
we don't look like we killed her. So.
We don't look like it's okay to kill royal people. That's really
what
they're...
So that was probably the best solution in the circumstances, I guess. But actually, let's take a break right now. And then when we come back, we'll talk more about Vlad the Impaler. We'll be back in just a minute.
Okay, everybody. Jenny's got some new shirt designs up. Four of them. Really good ones, too. Atlanta Ripper, Who Put Bella in the Witch Elm, the H.H. Holmes Murder Castle, and, of course, Demon Child, because man said he could. These are updated designs. I think they look really cool. Jenny did a great job on them. Were they fun making, Jenny?
They were very fun, and thank you very much. I think they came out very good.
Yeah, they came really good. They're very high-quality shirts. Jenny and I wear our own shirts at certain times when we're trying to put a spotlight on ourselves, and you can put a spotlight on yourselves. If you go ahead and pick up one of these shirts today, you guys are going to love them. Links in the description, www.zazzle.com at 13 o'clock.
Yeah, so go check out our store at www.zazzle.com/13 o'clock. We got these four cool new t-shirt designs, plus all our old ones if you'd rather get one of the old ones. But these ones are awesome, and you should check them out.
They're also available in women's cut, and they look really cute. Jenny's got some.
So thank you. Go check them out.
The Villisca Axe Murders, Interkaifeck Bond, The Axeman of New Orleans, The Cleveland Torso, Who Put Bella in the Witch Elm, The Solder Killer, The Phantom Killer, The Black Dahlia, Summerstone. What is it about these unsolved murders that still fascinates us long after the cases have gone cold? Is it simply that we enjoy being able to come up with our own theories about what happened to the unfortunate victims? Or are we intrigued by the terrifying possibility that the killers are still out there somewhere? Take a grisly journey through the blood-soaked avenues of early 20th century crime in the new book, The Faceless Villain, Volume 1, by Jenny Ashford, now available on Amazon.
The Unseen Hand, a new exploration of poltergeist phenomena, by Jenny Ashford. author of The Rochdale Poltergeist, House of Fire and Whispers, and The Mammoth Mountain Poltergeist. The Unseen Hand is a comprehensive collection of over 100 reported poltergeist cases from the first century to the present day. All the best-known cases are presented, from the Bell Witch to Jeff the Talking Mongoose, from Rosenheim to Tina Resch, from Enfield to the Entity. A large selection of fascinating and lesser-known accounts from all over the world are also included, and all contain testimony from the most eerie and extraordinary events. The Unseen Hand is the ultimate compendium for readers interested in poltergeist disturbances throughout history and the theories behind what causes them. On sale now from Amazon in print, ebook, and audiobook formats. Go to Unseen Hand Book on Facebook and visit www.jennyashford.com for more information.
Okay, and we're back. So while Vlad and Radu were, you know, imprisoned or in the custody of the Ottoman Turks, meanwhile, the dad, Vlad II, he was desperately trying to hang on to his throne back in Wallachia. He was actually kicked out by the boyars, the nobles.
Yeah.
They ousted him in 1447.
Now, the boyars are an interesting subject. The boyars were actually kind of like the descendants of Saxons. And they were Saxon merchants.
Yes.
That stretched all the way from, say, like the islands of Ireland all the way into almost the Middle East. And a lot of people don't know about them. There was a Saxon empire for a little while that quickly fell apart and became this kind of like transnational trade guild known, at least in Wallachia, as the Boyars.
Yeah.
I don't know what they were known as in other areas, but they were around for a little while. And they really didn't have any national loyalties. They were kind of like a, like I said, they were kind of like the eBay of the time. Transnational Trade Association. Maybe they could give you some credit. So they were kind of like eBay.
Yeah. That's a good way of putting it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so evidently, so Vlad II gets ousted, and then a little while later, he was actually killed along with Vlad's older brother, Mircea. They were both killed in the swamps not far away from Târgoviște. After that, like about a year after that happened, Vlad, as I said, he's been in Turkish custody for quite a while. It was for between 5 to 7 years, I believe. It was quite a long time. As I said, Radu went over to the Ottoman Turks. He just completely assimilated into their culture and sided with them. But Vlad had a mission. He did not like the Ottoman Turks. He just decided he was going to spend his entire life like fighting against them because he was just so bent on revenge. Yeah. So they say. So he decides in 1448, he's like, okay, well, I'm going to go. He gets released. I'm going to go back and get my father's throne back from the new leader that had been installed, who was Vladislav II.
Yeah.
Now, he actually got some Ottoman governors that were kind of along the Danube to help him out in this.
Yeah.
Now, it was good because Vladislav was actually out of town. He was like fighting some Ottoman Turks somewhere else. So he said, okay, well, while he's gone, I'm going to take this shit over.
Right, yeah.
And he did.
Right.
But then when Vladislav came back, he's like, man, get the fuck out of here. Right, yeah. So he was only in there for about 2 months.
Okay.
Between 1448 and 1456, not entirely sure what Vlad was up to. There's not a lot of...
probably not much happened.
Probably not much happened in that time because there's not a lot of
research. You're dealing with a place and time that was a lot kind of like the tribal regions of Afghanistan. It's a bunch of warlords. That's all it is.
So, but all they know from about this time period is that at this point, the Ottoman governors that he had fought with to get the throne from Vladislav, he kind of turned tail on them. And then he kind of got in with Ladislaus V of Hungary, and they both didn't like Vladislav, so he kind of like, you know, made an alliance with that guy. So in 1453 came the fall of Constantinople. And this was a big deal because then the Ottoman Turks were pretty much, after Constantinople fell, they're like, okay, well, all of Europe is open to us.
Yeah, that's the death of the Eastern Roman Empire because that was the capital of the Eastern Roman Empire. Yeah. Now, Eastern Roman Empire had kind of turned into this medieval weird fruit salad, you know, that was the world that we're talking about now. But historically, that would have been the official end of the Eastern Roman Empire.
Right.
That would have been an earth-shattering event, the fall of Constantinople.
So about 3 years after the fall of Constantinople, Vlad Tepes was reinstalled as the voivode of Wallachia. The first thing that...
So he becomes king of Wallachia during an apocalyptic time.
Yes.
That's we have to put that in their terms.
Yeah.
Not our terms. These words don't... These events don't really mean anything.
This doesn't
but
mean
to
anything.
Them, this meant ago, some yeah. big... Some serious shit. Imagine if you became president of Mississippi after the breakup of the United States because Washington, D.C. was conquered. It'd be like that.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, it was a huge, huge deal. So once he's reinstalled, the first thing he decides to do is that I am no longer going to pay the annual tribute to the Ottoman Sultan, which was something that had sort of been keeping an uneasy peace prior to that. So he's like, well, I'm not going to do that shit.
Not paying them suckers off anymore.
So I'm not going to do that anymore. So, you know, so that was happening. And also the boyars, there was a lot of infighting with them. And like some of them didn't like him.
eBay,
some of them were loyal to him.
eBay policies fucking him over.
Right. So now this could be true, could be not true. So he wants to kind of tamp down all the infighting between the boyars and everything like that. So legend goes that he invited a whole bunch of the boyars to a big party, big banquet and everything like that. The ones that didn't like him.
Yeah.
And while they were there, he had them all stabbed and impaled.
Yeah.
While they were still alive.
Yeah.
Now, this whole thing about impaling, I mean, the way he impaled people, and most people have seen the woodcuts of him, you know, sitting at the table with all the people, like the forest of spikes around him. When they were talking about impaling, what they had done before was they would impale you, like, through the stomach. Like, you were laying down and they'd impale you through the stomach. That Vlad wasn't doing that.
No, he didn't. He's a booty band.
Yeah. He's He would take a spike, he would grease it up.
Yeah, grease it up.
Stick it up your ass.
Yeah, and it wasn't totally sharp either.
It was kind of rounded.
He knew all about dildo-age.
Dildo-age.
That's right, man. If the stories are true, and I tend to think that it was true.
They probably are.
Because this could strike fear into the hearts
because
of your enemies.
Because this is some fucked up shit.
This would make any man fear. Whatever he would do, you're going to take it up the ass.
Right.
Until it killed you.
All right. Well, and it doesn't kill you right
away.
No,
it takes a long time.
They stick the thing up your butt, and then
they put
you upright.
And they greased it.
And it took and then gravity took over.
Took over slowly. That thing would just work its way.
Some of those people died of exposure before.
Yeah.
I mean, it's...
So days and days. And
yeah.
Yeah. So...
I mean, it's an... agonizing
right so
just this thing slowly inching its way up your butthole.
So this terror tactic actually works two or threefold.
Yes,
right? it does a couple things at once. One, it strikes fear into the heart of enemy men.
Oh yeah.
Okay. Two, it prevents enemy men from attacking you because they say, man, if we attack that guy and actually we are defeated, we'll end up on those poles.
Yep.
Okay.
And no one wants that.
Then the third thing that it does is it's a morale boosting for your army. Because, you know what I mean? They see defeated enemies die this way. Now, today, you would say if your army did that, you might, oh man, that's terrible. But we're talking about a medieval people with a medieval mentality. They added insult to injury. Injury wasn't enough. You had, because that was common. You had to go beyond that.
Yeah, I mean, it was a terrible time, really.
Right.
I mean, you had to really kind of go one step beyond.
You had to be beyond that. And then probably on the fourth level, was that this actually got better obedience out of your civilians. All your peasantries went, boy, we do have a strong king. And we better do exactly as we're told. And that worked back then.
Yeah.
Because how are you going to control people? There was no real legal system or law enforcement, you know, by today's standards. That really didn't exist. You had to rule everybody kind of through terror.
Well, story goes, and I'm not sure if this is entirely true or not, but story goes that all of the villages that were under Vlad Tepish's, you know, auspices or rule, he would put a really fancy gold cup
right in
the middle of the town square, and no one ever stole one because they were so afraid of him.
That's right. There was evident. Legend has it.
I'm not sure if that's true, but
legend,
that's one story.
Legend has it. Is when Vlad was in control of Wallachia, there was no crime.
I've heard that too. I'm not sure how true.
Probably pretty true.
I'm not sure how true there was, but they're just trying to show how terrifying.
Yeah, because he's talking about a guy kind of like the Kim dynasty in North Korea. There's no crime really in North Korea because three generations of your family will pay for the crime. So if you did something, your father and your children
would all be punished into the same prison.
Similar kind of stuff.
And that's what that Vlad did that too. I mean, you know, if evidently he would kill the wives right along with the husbands who had, you know, done something wrong. You know, it were brutal times. Brutal times.
Yeah.
Mass punishment works. I've seen it in the army. If one guy does something wrong, you punish the entire unit. And all of a sudden, nobody does anything wrong.
Because they don't want to be responsible.
They don't want to be responsible for that. So yeah. Mass punishment does work. It's not a Western concept and not a Western civilian concept. But I've seen it work. It works very well.
But like I said, I tend to think that most of the stories about Vlad Tepes, they might be slightly exaggerated. I don't think they're that exaggerated. Because the thing is, there were a lot of pamphlets that came out at the time. I mean, the printing press was had only been invented shortly before that. So once the printing press was invented, these stories that had been going around about Vlad while he was still alive had been circulating orally. And then they started getting printed up in these pamphlets. And like I said, not all of these pamphlets were printed by people that didn't like him, like the Ottoman Turks or anything. Some of them were printed by people that were at least partially friendly toward him.
It wouldn't surprise me if some of those pamphlets that I've seen were printed out by Vlad himself.
Probably, because
as part of his terror campaign.
Yeah.
Because that propaganda helped him in the end. Well, it was used against him eventually. But tactically, when the war was on, that fear was helping him, definitely.
And it should be noted, too, that there was a pamphlet that was published in 1490. It was written by a monk who was actually kind of friendly toward him. And he called Vlad a fierce but just ruler.
That's how I imagine him.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, other than impaling, he impaled these boyars, supposedly. He impaled a bunch of the Saxon merchants in a town called Kronstadt, which nowadays is called Brasov.
Yeah, I know more about the boyars, you know. The boyars, they were these Saxon merchants, and they had evidently a reputation for being very haughty and looking down on the host nations that they worked in. And they also manipulated the throne from behind the throne. In other words, you know what I mean? Boyars were kind of manipulators and oppressors of local kingdoms. So it doesn't surprise me that he did kill boyars.
And another very famous story about him that's from about this same time is that there was a bunch of Ottoman Turks who came as an envoy to Vlad's court to, you know, have an audience with him or whatever. And they refused to take off their turbans, citing that it was a religious custom. They never took off their turbans for anyone. And he said, well, I'll just make it so that they never come off. And he nailed them to their heads.
Right. So he's doing what a leader in that time and that position should do. He is putting his culture in his land dominant over the hostile cultures that have invaded it. That's what he's doing. So what you're talking about is fierce nationalism, if you want to call a kingdom a nation, but you know.
Because this isn't it's a big area, but it's not like
a gang. Basically, it's a gang that occupies a certain territory. It has its own culture. It's from there. It's born and raised there.
Yeah.
And it's going to do what it wants to do, and it's going to put its culture and its rule above all foreigners. That's what you do when you're at war and in the position that he's in. So I call that a good call. Whether it actually happened or not, I don't know. You see, sometimes just lying and making that story up that you did that is just as effective as actually doing it.
Yeah, you might not even actually
You don't
have
actually
to do.
Have to do it. You can just lie. I nailed all them turbans down on all them people. And the people would go, oh, man, that's fantastic. all the peasants would go, yeah, that's right. You know, those haughty, you know, Saxons, you know, coming in here and trying to tell us that we're backwards peasants, you know. Yeah. Fuck them.
But yeah, so then another thing that happened, you know, right around this time in 1462, what was then the Ottoman Sultan, who was Mehmed II, he was the same guy that had taken over Constantinople. Now, he invaded Wallachia in 1462. He gets as far as Turgovishta, which is where they think Vlad was born. The whole town was deserted, and there was a forest of like 20,000 spikes with a person on it. Every one of them. These were all the Ottoman prisoners of war, evidently, that Vlad had captured over the time. And he just impaled all these motherfuckers.
Right.
And at this point now, historians differ. Some of them
said... I think it happened, but the numbers are wrong.
Right. Now, some of the... Yeah. I mean, the numbers are that Vlad killed somewhere between 60,000 and 100,000 people. I don't know how exactly
that's
that is.
That's a huge army.
That's a lot of people.
And in that period, armies weren't that big.
And he might not have impaled all of them, because that seems very labor-intensive.
Well, he probably couldn't feed that many captives.
Right.
So you have to kill them. And you can't let them go. They'll just go back home and rejoin the army that they came from. I probably think that that's a highly inflated number. Probably more like 800 to maybe 2,000 prisoners.
But that's enough, like that's marching into a village seeing a whole bunch of people twitching on spikes. That's got to be a little upsetting.
And you put them up on them spikes right on the roads of ingress.
Yeah.
That way, when the enemy counterattack comes, they have to walk through all these poles of the dead, which demoralizes the enemy. And they go, man, this guy, he's inhuman.
Yeah. Doing
this. We got to get out of here. Because if we lose, we'll end up like these guys.
Yeah. You know. And I think that's kind of what happened because, now, like I said, I saw some different historians talking about, because the legend goes that, you know, as Mehmed and his army, like, marched into Targovishta and they were like, fuck this. And then they turned around and left. Although some of them have said, you know, the Sultan would have just been like, oh, fair enough. And then he would have turned around. Now, they said the guys in the army might have been terrified. That's like pretty horrifying if that would happen to you. But, you know, since the Sultan was kind of, you know, he'd seen that shit before. Maybe, so he was just kind of like, oh, good one.
Yeah, because what you're really talking about is maybe only one or two notches above normal violence.
What was normal going?
Right, yeah. It's not that big. Not that big of a deal for them.
Yeah. I mean, they were used to like death and stinking bodies.
They didn't live long
anyway.
These guys didn't live long anyway.
So it's like, you know, the fact that, like you said, it was only a notch or two above
what was normal.
I mean, now people did comment on it, so obviously it was unusual, but it probably wasn't that unusual.
It had a certain theatrical flair to it.
It did, and that's a good way of putting it.
Now, here's another thing. A lot of these are legends. Now, the source of the legends, you don't know when these legends appeared. I tend to think, in general, when you're talking about Vlad, I think most of it was based in something that happened. The numbers probably inflated.
Are inflated, sure.
Right.
And I felt the same way about Elizabeth Bathory. It's like, did she kill 600 virgin girls?
Nah.
I doubt it.
Probably more like 60.
I mean, she probably was a serial killer.
Probably think she was,
But I don't think she killed 600 people.
600, that's a little high.
That's a lot of people.
That's a lot of work.
That's what I mean.
And keep all that underneath the wraps.
Yeah, I mean, people would complain.
I mean, there are modern serial killers today that can knock down 100 people. It's a hard call because she had a bunch of servants and she had legal protection and a castle. Maybe you could kill 600, but you would think that the peasantry wouldn't tolerate it.
Yeah, that's what you would think. I mean, they would just like burn your shit down.
Burn your shit down and attack you with pitchforks. She wasn't known for having a powerful army protecting her, unless, you know, but they were saying she did it through subterfuge. We're on another subject.
Yeah, we already did a show on that.
It's a hard call. 600 sounds high to me.
Yeah, but I mean, it's kind of related because we're talking about, did Vlad Tepes actually kill 60,000 people, 100,000 people?
No.
And like I said,
of those days weren't that big.
Even if he did kill that many people, I'm sure they're talking about like, oh, his army killed that many people. Did he impale that many people? No way. There's just no way.
He had an army. It wasn't a big army. That's why he was doing this kind of stuff.
Right.
Yeah, he did have some victories, but the victories were against armies that were only a little bit bigger than his, or, you know, maybe 50% bigger, maybe 100% bigger. Were there that many captives taken? Probably not.
Yeah, because where the hell would you put them all?
Yeah. Armies of that era were not very big.
Right.
A 1,000-man army was a pretty big army in those days.
Yeah. So, not too long after this whole, you know, marching on Targovishta and all the impaled bodies kind of thing happened, Vlad was actually forced into exile, sent to Hungary, because he couldn't, you know, as much as that, you know, whole Forest of Spikes thing had been fairly effective, Mehmet still had a much larger army, and Vlad couldn't really fight him on an even playing field. So Vlad was actually put into prison for a while after this, for some undetermined amount of time. During that time, they think he married and had some kids. So after Vlad was imprisoned the second time, his younger brother, Radu the Handsome, who was actually still on the side of the Ottomans, he was always on the side of the Ottomans, he actually took over Vlad's position for a little while. But then Radu died in 1475, and the boyars that were left over, apparently these were the ones that were left alive after Vlad killed them all, presumably, these guys actually wanted Vlad back. So in 1476, Vlad actually got the help of another voivod, the one from Moldavia, who was named Stephen III. Him and Vlad kind of got together and went back to get his seat in Wallachia back. He got the throne back. So this is like the third time, right?
Yeah.
But he was on there for less than a year.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was actually marching to battle with the Ottomans again. And him and some of his soldiers, he just had a bunch of little soldiers with him. They got ambushed.
Yeah.
And they were all wiped out.
Wiped out, yeah.
Now, legend goes that whoever killed Vlad Tepes sent his head to Mehmet II saying, look, he's dead.
Probably true.
That's probably true. To prove that he had been killed,
right.
Yeah. So that was his kind of ignominious end.
Yeah.
He got killed and beheaded while he was marching out to battle again. Only on, like I said, only on the throne for a brief time.
Yeah.
Three times he's kind of put up there and deposed.
To this day, he's a national hero of Romania.
Yep. And there are statues of him all over the place over there.
Their version of Vlad Tepes is different from the version that the West knows. To them, he's a hero. To me, I say, yeah, I like the guy. He was a man of his times.
Yeah.
I think a lot of what you hear about him was based in true events.
Yeah.
I think it was, the numbers were exaggerated.
Sure.
I think the brutality and the characterizations of the brutality probably exaggerated. Probably some of it exaggerated by him. I think mostly what he did was basically maybe pretty standard for the day, maybe taking it up one notch or two. But that was the time. He was a man of his time.
Yeah, that's kind of what you did.
Man of his time and place. Not only was he basically in the end of the Dark Ages, or still in the Dark Ages, for he was also that place that he was in was like almost like a frontier.
Yeah.
So it wasn't really a normal situation, even for the rest of Europe. So he just did what a man would do if he was in charge, what you would have to do if you were in charge to get that mission done that he was given.
Yeah.
You
know? Now, there are also stories about him, too, that he also tried to employ scorched earth tactics when the Ottoman Turks were coming over the Danube, where he would basically take the villages along the Danube of his own people and basically just burn them all out.
Yeah.
So there was nothing there for the Ottoman soldiers to feed on. I'm not sure if that's entirely true.
Well, that
or
was going on in the Civil War. Or but even in the 1800s, you know, scorched earth policy is pretty well known. It's been used for a long time. Kind of standard if you're on the defense.
But like you said, even in modern day Romania, he is actually considered a national hero.
Yeah.
There's statues of him. And I actually heard on some documentaries that I was looking at about him that were on YouTube, there were some comments on there from some Romanians. They said, don't you go to Romania and talk shit about Vlad Tepes. You'll get your ass kicked.
Yeah. Oh, I can see why, though. You know, this is a warrior hero, you know, and he's doing what a hero does, which is a hero defends his friends and his family and his nation, and he's good to them, and then he's ruthless to his enemies. That's the way of the warrior, especially in those days.
Yeah.
Mercy was considered to be injustice in those days.
Yeah.
Like, to have mercy on an enemy force would be considered an injustice because of all the crimes that they had committed against your people. Showing them mercy would be an injustice. It was just a different time and a different way of looking at things.
Now, they're not entirely sure where Vlad III was buried. Most people, and if you go to the Snagov Monastery, he does actually have a grave marker there, and there's like paintings of him and stuff like that. But the more they are looking into it, they think he's probably not buried there. That they think he's probably buried at another monastery at Comana, because that was much closer to where they think he was killed. Now, let's talk just a tiny bit right before we end. The conflation of Vlad the Impaler with the fictional character of Dracula.
Yeah.
Now, as I said, the whole public perception of this really didn't come into popular culture until about 1972. There was a book called In Search of Dracula, which was written by Radu Florescu and Raymond McNally, who were historians. And they wrote this whole book about the similarities between the fictional character of Dracula and Vlad Tepes. Now, it is true that Bram Stoker took the name Dracula, and actually, I didn't know this, but the vampire in Dracula was actually supposed to be named Count Wampir.
Yeah, Wampir.
Wampir. Wampir, which vampire. I'm like, that's, yeah. I'm so glad that he picked Dracula, because, I mean, that's just Wampir. That's like Wampir. Just way too on the nose. Yeah, that would have been really dumb.
And in a lot of languages, W and V are interchangeable, of course, so it means vampire.
Yeah, Count Vampire. Count Vampire.
Count Vampire.
Wah, wah. Yeah. Thank you, Bram, for coming for not naming him that. Yeah. So he did take the name Dracula. And there are some parallels in the book Dracula. He does say he fought the Ottoman Turks, that he was betrayed by his brother, which Vlad was from his point of view, because Radu had gone over to the Ottoman Turk side, and he saw that as a betrayal. So there was a lot of that, but The thing about it is that Bram Stoker, he actually never went to Transylvania. He never went to Hungary. He was, I think, friends with a Hungarian professor who gave him like some little bits and bobs of Hungarian history. So he did know enough about it. They're not actually entirely sure if the castle that he used for Castle Dracula was a real castle or one that he just imagined. They said he might have seen pictures of Bran Castle, which is, you know, called Castle Dracula nowadays, even though Vlad Tepes never lived there. As I said, the castle that he actually lived in was Poenari. But like I said, they're not entirely sure. And really, Bram Stoker, he had a lot of notes about Dracula before he while he was writing it, and they have survived. He doesn't mention Vlad Tepes in there, actually. Yeah. He does mention that the word Dracula in Romanian or in the Wallachian language of the time does mean devil or dragon. So he did know that, but he didn't mention Vlad Tepes specifically. And there's also the whole thing about blood drinking. One of the very famous stories about Vlad Tepes is that he would, not only did he impale all these people on spikes, and then he set up his little dinner table in the middle of all these spikes of like all these twitching people, and then he would dip his bread in their blood.
If that happened, he did that on purpose. He did that to freak people
Bitches.
Out.
Bitches. Yeah.
He did that to
he
freak
was doing
people.
That.
I'm so bad. You know what? Here, come on. Give me some of that. Oh, that's pretty good. That's pretty good.
You
Get
guys
back to work.
Are delicious.
Yeah. And he did that to be observed doing that.
Right.
If he did that.
Now that actually, well, where that legend comes from, they've traced it back to a poem that was written about him at about the same time, 15th century, that was written in German. Now, actually, the German translation I've heard is erroneous.
Yeah.
What they actually said was that he would wash his hands in the people's blood before he ate, which isn't exactly the same.
That's not the same thing.
As dipping the bread.
Okay, so the whole dipping bread thing is made up.
Kind of.
Yeah, okay.
But, you know, that's
probably.
That's a very common story about him.
Right.
You know, I think that's where, like, those kind of stories are where the blood drinking thing kind of came from. Although I suspect that Bram Stoker actually based, because he looked a lot into Eastern European lore, folklore, and things like that. Now, there is an Eastern European legend about creatures that are called, I might be pronouncing this wrong, but I think they're called Moroi.
Okay.
What they are, basically, because in Eastern Europe, they follow the Eastern Orthodox Church, which, unlike Catholicism, does not have the concept of purgatory.
Right.
So if there were children born and they died before they were baptized, there was a perception that these little ghosts of these little kids or their little souls would be wandering around. And for whatever reason, these little ghost children, unbaptized souls, drank blood, but not human blood. They would drink it from cows.
Okay.
From cows.
Kind of like a vampire bat.
Yeah. So, so they're like little vampire ghost children.
Yeah.
So that might have been where Bram Stoker got the idea of the vampire. Or he might have known something about Vlad the Impaler. But like I said, you know, he did know about Vlad the Impaler, but I don't know how much that blood drinking thing was going on, if they knew those stories about it as much.
Right.
When Bram Stoker wrote Dracula in
well, if
the
you're
19th
if
century.
You're Bram and you're in the Victorian era and you're trying to connect a vampire character to somebody in history, Vlad would have been a good choice.
Yeah,
because that would have been an exotic, faraway place, badass warrior who died or disappeared on the battlefield. Nobody was sure where he was buried, you know. Maybe there's a little bit of plausible deniability that he didn't die. And, you know, the fearsome things that he did on the battlefield with people's blood and impalement, you know, and conflicts with the church and Islam. Yeah, you know, that's a badass vampire. Make a badass vampire. So you'd write him into the story.
Yeah, he did use bits of his history.
Yeah.
You know, he even in the book Dracula, he uses the word, Professor Van Helsing uses the word Voivod.
Yeah.
And he, you know, fighting against the Ottoman Turks and whatnot.
Yeah, and this is in a faraway place. In a faraway place from a long ago time when Wallachia was, you know, this dark frontier of evil and mystery and bloodshed and savagery, you know, and that's where he came from a castle out there.
And that's why they think that maybe he had seen pictures
with
of Bram.
Gypsies defending him.
Right.
Remember that? The gypsies are defending him. Yeah.
But that's why they think maybe he had seen photographs of Bram. Because like I said, he never went to Hungary. He never went to Wallachia. He never went anywhere like that. He just did a lot of research. That he might have seen pictures of Bram Castle because that looks like the classic Castledrake is up on a hill. It's all foggy and creepy and everything. And like I said, that's the one now that tourists go to that's called Castle Dracula, even though he never lived there. So they think maybe that's why. But, you know, it's possible, too, that Bram Stoker could have used, I mean, other than using Vlad Tepes, he also could have used Elizabeth Bathory as an inspiration, too, because of her bathing in blood and drinking blood and whatnot. And also, it should be noted that there was a classic vampire story called Carmilla, written by Sheridan Le Fanu, and Stoker, I'm sure, had read that. So that probably influenced him a lot as well.
About when was that written? That had to have been based on Bathory, huh?
Yeah, and Carmilla was actually written 26 years before Dracula was written.
Inspired probably by Countess Bathory.
Oh yeah, right, Carmilla definitely Carmilla, was. Right. But yeah, so
well, I'd like to see a good movie of that.
There have actually been a lot of sort of loose film adaptations of that. The one that I was thinking of was actually The Vampire Lovers from 1970. It was a Hammer film with Ingrid Pitt in it. That was kind of loosely based. It was set in the modern day, but it was kind of loosely based on Carmilla. But there have been like a ton of other ones. I mean, there was one just called Vampire. That was from 1932. It was a silent film.
I'd want like a modern one that would top that last Bram Stoker's vampire movie.
There was actually
real high budget. Budget, good costumes, scary castle, a lot of good CG in it, you know. That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah.
I almost have like, almost kind of almost torture porn, like Saw.
Yeah.
Had that element in there.
That would actually, cool. Yeah, that'd actually be pretty cool.
Yeah.
There was actually, in 2015, there was a web series called Carmilla, and they made it into a movie in 2017, although I haven't seen it, so I don't know if it's any good or not. So I'm kind of thinking that was... Since that predated Dracula by so long, I'm sure that Bram Stoker read it because it was actually a really popular book.
Yeah.
All right. So I think that'll do it for our discussion about Vlad the Impaler. I hope you guys enjoyed. This is episode 101.
So the final verdict was Vlad was awesome. I like Vlad. He's all right. He's a good dude.
Just don't expose your booty hole around him.
Don't get on his bad side. Stay off of his land. You'll be all right.
Stay off his lawn.
Yeah.
All right. So remember, if you like the show, do like, share, subscribe on all your social media, and please share with all your friends. If you'd like to financially support the show, you can go to our Patreon page, which is patreon.com/13o'clock, or you can go to our blog, which is 13o'clockpodcast.wordpress.com, and there's a link in the sidebar to a PayPal account if you'd like to make a one-time donation. Also, please check out our merchandise at our Zazzle store, which is zazzle.com/13o'clock. We have lots of cool shirts and a tote bag. Also, check out our last movie review, which was The Running Man. And I think that will do it for episode 101, and we will see you next time. Bye.